Hello, this is Angela Ewing with KCIW, Curry Coast Community Radio. For my Coastal Classics program this week, I have the pleasure to tell you about the upcoming performance hosted by Brookings Friends of Music, the Jasper String Quartet. Tom Broderick is here with me to discuss the pieces that will be played by this talented group. But first, I'd like to tell you about the quartet, which is named after the Jasper National Park in Alberta, Canada, and was formed at Oberlin Conservatory when the Jaspers began pursuing a professional career in 2006. The group is composed of a first violin, second violin, viola, and cellist. Each of the members are incredible musicians in their own right. Together, their music has been described as precise and elegant, played with confidence and comprehension way beyond their years. I did go into their website, and I'd like to read part of it, because it's a very interesting group. It says that they are the winner of the prestigious CMA Cleveland Quartet Award. Philadelphia's Jasper String Quartet is the professional quartet, and they're in residence at the Temple University Center for Gifted Young Musicians, which tells us a lot about their talent. The Jaspers have been hailed as sonically delightful and expressively compelling and powerful. The Jaspers match their sounds perfectly, as if each swelling chord were coming out of a single impossibly well-tuned organ instead of four distinct instruments. The Jasper String Quartet has brought well over 200 outreach programs into schools and enjoys educational work of all types in their Melba and Orville Rolofson residency at the Banff Centre, where they embarked on guerrilla chamber music, performing concerts in unusual settings around Alberta, Canada. Currently, the quartet works closely with Philadelphia's Astral artists who bring outreach activities to schools, which I thought was a very interesting little write-up there. So I would like to talk to Tom, and because he is an excellent person, someone that we need to hear, because he has all the knowledge that we will understand when he's talking to us about the music that's going to be played today. So thank you for being with us to discuss the music in this program.
Thank you. I'm glad to be here.
Perhaps you can identify the difference for me between chamber music and an orchestral performance.
Well, the major difference, of course, is size of the ensemble. Most chamber music is as little as 1 to 20 participants. We have had chamber ensembles here from France, for example, that numbered 19. But on the other hand, orchestras can number anywhere from 50 to even 90 members. So there's a huge difference in size and the complexity of just the logistics of trying to get a large group here, even a small chamber orchestra of 19.
Right.
The logistics of getting that many people to Brookings is very difficult and expensive, very expensive.
Yes.
So we've done that. We don't do it very often because it is an outlier expense, if you will. We have tried several orchestras here, but most of the time our chamber music groups number 3 to 5, and that's pretty normal for us.
Yeah, it's good because at least on any stage, if it's going to be for an orchestra, you'd need a very big stage. So the stage at the church is ideal for a smaller group, isn't it, really?
Yes, our present venue is perfect for a smaller chamber group.
Yes, yes.
And would not really accommodate an orchestra.
No.
Not even a 50.
Right, right. Now, I'm sure that most of us are aware that in most classical concerts, there's a first violinist and a second violinist. So why do they need to state that? Why is there a first and second violinist?
The major reason is that the composer writes the music for the first violin. He also composes the music for the second violin. And he has harmonic and outcomes of those two instruments playing that he definitely wants in the music. And he wants that to be heard. Mm-hmm. So they're actually different parts. They complement each other.
Right.
And that's the reason why we have first and second parts, and a different part for viola, for example, and one for cello. They all have written, the composer has written all of those parts so that they meld together and make one sound. And as they, you just mentioned it, Jasper Group is known for its great sound as if it were one instrument.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Now, these musicians perform pieces that were composed for strings, of course, and the composers in the 16th century were prolific at that time, weren't they?
Oh, yes. Yeah.
Was that because they were commissioned by the court, usually?
Some were commissioned by courts and kings, so on, but most of the music in the early century there, of 17th century and 18th century, most of the music was commissioned by the church.
All right.
The church had the money and commissioned, I would say, 90% of all the classical music at that time that was written. So that's an interesting aside to it. It was very difficult from a commercial point of view to make a living in those eras. Darn near impossible, really.
Right, yeah. Right. It seems to me that with Amadeus Mozart, who was born in 1756, I guess he died in 1792, he was commissioned by the King of Prussia, who asked for a piece in D major. So a string quartet in D major is, now is that an opus, would you say? That had to be, as you say, a number? An opus means the number of pieces that he did?
Yes, it does exactly, the number of pieces that he has completed. Final written form, yes, exactly mm-hmm. that.
And what else would you say about Mozart? Because he's obviously very prolific in his pieces and very well known, I would say.
He was a remarkable, very, very colorful and precise at the same time. And some of his music is just borders on the angelic, if you will. He had an insight to sound that I haven't, that I can't find anyone else even closely affiliated with their music that way. He was remarkable. And when people ask him about where did you study? He said, I have studied everyone here. He had studied Haydn, he had studied Beethoven, he had studied, let's see, who else at that time?
No, but these are all in this particular era. We're talking about 1756. I mean, the music was totally different then, wasn't it?
Yes.
As far as rhythm and the sort of music that people listened to. Because, as you say, most of them were commissioned by the church and they wanted a certain type of music, presumably.
Yes, that's true. The majority of the music was religious in nature. I would like to maybe just jump in here and talk about Mozart for a moment. He had a very short life. He lived only 36 years. And yet he was a very prolific, incredible composer. And some of his music, of course, was commissioned by kings and others. But at one point in his life, and as he was married and had children and so on, he was really up against it from an economic point of view. And he was writing daily little piano concertos, for example, that he would get other people to play with him. And he was very short-tempered with their inability to play with him without notice and without practice, of course. So he was scratching for a living, if you will, and that was very difficult to do in those days. And, of course, no one lived very long in those days because we didn't have immunizations. We didn't have antibiotics. Those things have made a huge difference in our lifespan.
And their living wasn't very good. I mean, the
conditions
of living
were deplorable, frankly. So we lost him at the age of, of 36, and that was a great blow to humanity as far as I'm concerned.
It seems to me that a lot of composers died young in those days. Is that because of the general conditions and the fact that they really had to work hard, didn't they, to make a living in music? If they were true musicians, they would really have to work very hard to please everybody.
Yes, it was a difficult environment to succeed in terms of being a composer.
Right.
Without the church subsidies and royalty subsidies, it was very difficult to make a living at it. Some people did. Some of the composers did manage to do that, but they were certainly rare indeed.
Well, our next piece is by Samuel Barber, and he was a modern composer born in Pennsylvania in 1910. He died in 1981, having composed string quartet in B minor, opus 11. So being a very modern composer, would the music reflect the music of today? How would you define that?
I would say so. I think he'd certainly be the 20th century, one of the great composers of the 20th century. This particular quartet features a movement called the Adagio. Absolutely one of the most beautiful pieces of music ever written. And I've heard it before with a quartet, and you also hear it even with symphony orchestras. It is incredibly popular. It's played all the time. But I want to tell you, if you haven't heard it in the round and in live, like we're going to have it this weekend, believe me, you're going to miss something, because there's something about listening to live music that is an incredibly different experience. It really is. And I guarantee that you will, just this item alone, the Adagio for Strings, one of four parts of this quartet that he wrote, is worth your visit to our concert hall.
We were talking about that one.
You will never forget it. You will never forget it. It's the strings sing to you. It's just remarkable.
Well, we were talking earlier about how lucky we are to have groups like this in a small place, because we obviously, you know, not everybody has that chance to have a small place where we have great music. In other words, it's not just music in the park. This is very special, and the price of admission is so small. We have to make people kind of understand that for the quality of music, it really should be a little more expensive. Do you agree?
Oh, I would agree with that. We currently charge $15 to attend our performances, and if you were in Medford, it'd be $45, $50, and if
exactly.
You were in Los Angeles, it'd be $100. So, and you should know that we spend about $50,000 a year to bring these performers here. So it's not a small investment by any means, and we watch it carefully and we make it work. But if you have 100 people attend a concert, and that does happen to us, sometimes it's 130, you can see that at that level of ticket sales, which would be 1500 and up, wouldn't begin to cover the cost of a $7,000 quartet, for example, that's on the stage. So I don't want to call it a bargain, because that cheapens the idea. But it's very inexpensive compared to anywhere you can go.
Yes, I think so too. It's great music. So moving along to Beethoven with the B-flat major, opus 130. He was born in 1770, died in 1827. Again, he was pretty young. He died at 56. That's not very old, is it?
Well, it doesn't surprise me. The hygienic conditions didn't improve that much in that few short years.
Right.
And we still didn't have the medical breakthroughs of antibiotics and immunizations and so on. So, they lived in precarious times from a health point of view. I think at the turn of the century, I recall that the average lifespan of a male was about 35 years of age
exactly.
At that time. So we've certainly changed a great deal over the years.
Now, this piece apparently is considered a difficult piece, and it was condemned in 1826 and not played again for 27 years, which is really interesting. What do you think about that?
Well, I'm going to hazard a guess, because remember, the churches were the commissioned most of the music at that in those years. If you remember, most of the big churches had pipe organs, and most of the music, for example, that Bach wrote, many fugued movements to complement their music, his music rather. So the fugue really has a religious connotation to it, if you will. I think I can see where the churches might have thought that that was their domain, that was their kind of music, and they didn't want to see it in the profane public arena, if you will.
Right.
So there we are. I'm going to hazard that guess that the great fugues on a pipe organ are amazing to hear if you've ever been to a performance. They're just amazing.
Right, right.
What amazes me is that Beethoven actually is going to duplicate that with four instruments. That should be very interesting to listen to and surprising. I haven't heard it in my lifetime, so I'm really anxious to hear it.
Yes.
Another thing about fugues that I want to mention is that the great Leopold Stokowski, the director of the great Philadelphia Orchestra, had a unique gift of transcribing Bach's fugues into great orchestra sounds. The whole orchestra was involved. And you can still buy those CDs of Stokowski with Bach translations, or if you will, the transcriptions, if you will. It's the best word for it. And they will just simply amaze you. And I really encourage anyone, if you haven't heard it, that's one you need to buy.
Now, it says here that the critic Glenn Gould has hailed it as the greatest piece of music ever written, this fugue.
Glenn Gould. Well, that's his opinion, of course. And he wrote, most of the time Glenn Gould performed Bach. That was his stock in trade.
I see.
I'll never forget seeing him. He had a rickety old chair, like a kitchen chair, if you will. And he sat on that kind of far back and had his arms straight out. And he would play Bach in the most masterful way, unbelievably able to do it from memory. And he had an absolute cult following for his performances. Unfortunately, this Canadian pianist died in a plane crash relatively young. I think he was in his 30s.
Who, Glenn Gould? He was relatively...
Mm-hmm. We lost him early to a plane crash, and that's unfortunate.
Yes, yes. Well, this sounds as though it's a wonderful concert.
Yeah, I think it's fantastic. I think if you can get yourself there, you'll go away with a special experience in live music and how wonderful it sounds.
Yes, it sounds as though it's going to be fantastic. So this is just a reminder that the concert will take place at the Seventh-day Adventist Church, 102 Park Avenue in Brookings, and that's at 3 p.m., The tickets are $15, and discounted season tickets will be available, of course. Students under 18 are admitted free, and of course we'd love to see you there. Tickets may be purchased at the door or at Wright's Custom Framing and Art Supplies. You can get further information at 541-412-2957 or visit BrookingsHarborFriendsOfMusic.org. So I hope you'll put February 26th at 3 p.m. down on your calendar. This is Angela Ewing with KCIW, Curry Coast Community Radio, soon to be broadcast on KCIW LP 100.7 FM. Thank you for listening, and thank you so much, Tom, for being with us today.
My pleasure.